Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by RamVPN.com, the leading provider of next-generation online anonymity and VPN security solutions. Their architecture is unique, tamper-safe, and 100% guaranteed. They even accept Bitcoin. Listeners of the Organic View Radio Show can receive a 15% discount in 3-month and 6-month personal plans by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW. For more promotional offers, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com. Back in 2011, I did an interview with Bertram Verhaagh about his groundbreaking documentary, Scientists Under Attack. In light of what has been going on in the scientific community, I thought many of you might want to hear it if you haven't heard it already. Today, my very special guest is Bertram Verhaagh, and we're going to be talking about his film, Scientists Under Attack, Science in the Magnetic Field of Money. Now, they say that money is the root of all evil. When it comes to corporate responsibility, this is clearly the case, as the only legal responsibility corporations have is to make money for their shareholders. The chemical companies have clever marketers spinning ads promoting the healthfulness of genetically modified organisms, while at the same time deploying thug tactics to silence anyone, including established and well-respected scientists that have done the research to prove otherwise. Filmmaker Bertram Verhaagh is the producer of a documentary called Scientists Under Attack, Science in the Magnetic Field of Money, which takes a closer look at the ruthless tactics deployed by these companies as he revealed to the audience the attacks that scientists who have uncovered the truth about GMOs have actually suffered. Now, featured in this film are anti-GMO activist Jeffrey Smith, Professor Ignacio Chapella, Dr. Andrew Kimbrell, who's also head of the Center for Food Safety, and he's one of two lawyers who sued the Food and Drug Administration back in 1998. Also featured is Professor Arpad Pusai, who's a 35-year world-renowned biochemist and leading expert on food studies, who was suspended for lifetime back in 1999 after making his findings public about GMOs in a sheer 150-second interview, which the funny thing is that he was first praised and then threatened thereafter with lawsuits. So if you don't understand still what the dire threat of GMOs and why we as people need to take action, this is one segment that you really need to pay attention to. And feel free to encourage your friends and family that really don't understand what exactly is going on to listen to today's segment, because my guest has worked directly with these people and he has so much information to share with everyone today. So please welcome Bertram Verhaagh. Good evening, Bertram.
Yes, thank you. Good evening and good afternoon for you.
Thank you. And it's amazing. I love technology. We are able to connect with so many people around the globe. The Organic View radio show has such an amazing audience. People around the globe can listen to the podcast archives, which is not only available on theorganicview.com, but on iTunes, Zune, every major podcast provider that's out there. And it's amazing that the information is so easily available. And the fact that we have over 1 million listeners in just such a short space of time really is just tremendous. So I am so happy that I can talk to you today and hopefully enlighten and educate my audience, especially those that either are not familiar with the people that you have interviewed, as well as the subjects that you've explored. So at this point, can you please talk about yourself, and can you just talk about how you got into filmmaking?
Well, That's a long story because I make films in more than 30 years already. And I studied economics and then I worked here in Munich in the development of the town, an apartment who thinks about development. And we made studies, and some of these studies were done. It is the council of the town who asked for the studies, and then they took it for secret, and they were never published. And so I thought, I don't want to work 2 years, and then it would be somewhere in a cupboard or what. And then, per chance, I can't remember quite well, I went to the film school here in Munich for 3 years, and then with two friends I started a company and making films. This was in 78 already. And we decided at that time that we only want to make films on political, on social, on environmental subjects. And that we did for all this more than 30 years. And we made a very famous film on racism, which I shot in the United States, in Iowa and Kansas City, with Jane Elliott. The name of the film is Blue Eyed. And it's very, very good, sold as DVD and VHS in earlier times in the United States. And it's, if you don't know Jane Elliott, she is a person who made a sort of, or let me tell you, she was a teacher in Iowa. And at the time when Martin Luther King was killed, she wanted to explain to her students why he was killed, why a man only because he was not white was killed in this society. And then he made an experiment with her students, dividing them in blue-eyed and brown-eyed people. And she treated the blue-eyed people for 1 day like brown-eyed. And they were not allowed to speak together and to drink from the same thing and everything. And this was very, very impressive for these children. And but she was not very loved by her the other teachers and the director. And very soon he left the... She left the school and did this work, which I described with this role-playing with brown-eyed and blue-eyed, with people and companies, and she moved really a lot with this. And we made a film, and this was our most impressive and very famous film, Blue-Eyed. And I think it changed a lot because we had a very good response here in Germany and even in Australia when it was shown. They showed it 4 and 5 times once more, and there was a big, big movement after this film. That was great. But let's speak about GMO. It was 10 years ago, I was, or more, 15 years ago, I was asked to make a film on a cancer mouse, which was patented at that time here at the European Patent Office. And I said, I don't know anything about this. I'm not a scientist, and I'm just a journalist, and I'm not able to make such a film. You have to ask somebody else. And then it took some years that I read a very small article on the so-called Terminator gene or Terminator plants. That means the industry changed plants, making them sterile, and that's why the word is Terminator. And then from 1 second to another, I understood why genetic engineering is done. It's not to bring us any better quality or more food or whatever. It's only to get power over the market, because in this case of Terminator genes, you can plant them out, you can yield them, but you can't use it once more for the next year. And this is over thousands of years old right of farmers that they keep some of their yield and put it in the earth for the next year. And industry wanted to get power on this, and they forced the farmers, because the seed is sterile, they forced the farmers to buy new seeds every year.
Now, isn't it also true that any of the existing crops that are exposed to it also become sterile?
Yes, that's a danger. But let me continue, because
sure.
I said, suddenly I recognized I don't have to be a scientist to make a film on this subject, because I'm just a consumer, I'm a member of the society, and I don't want that the industry is making the heart of life, the seed, the crops, sterile. I don't want this, and I'm not asked if they are allowed to do this, because they wanted to spread it all over the world in this way. And this made me furious, and I entered this area of genetic engineering. And the second thing was that I recognized that industry is introducing such a big thing in society without asking the people. And that is not democratic, because it is not reversible. If you change plants or crops into genetic engineered ones. And so I started with this work, and we made our first film, or one of our first films, which was Life Running Out of Control. It's also available in the U.S. With Bullfrog Films. And this film is between one, or in 1 year, it was the standard work on genetic engineering. Because if you don't know anything about it, look at this film, you will understand. You will understand why industry is doing it, and you will understand the dangers which come with genetic engineering.
Well, I think what is also important to mention is the fact that you are not just producing some film for entertainment, or God knows, you're not doing this for the money, because this isn't a way that you're going to make a lot of money in anytime soon. But you're connecting directly with the people who are doing the research. And, you know, it's very similar to what I've been doing. And I think it's important, because people like movies, people like films, they prefer to watch something than to read about it or to even listen to it. And I think that especially if you could put something together that is not only based upon fact, but also is educational, that really is a great recipe for success. Because I think when we empower the people, and it doesn't matter what country they're in, or what their beliefs are, but when you give people information, especially when it's information based upon facts, that is what changes things.
Yeah, and I think you have to do it in a way that people can understand it, that they can follow you. My situation was the same. I said, I'm not a scientist. I don't understand anything. I didn't learn in school what a gene is, and so on. And then I entered slowly, slowly, and slowly, and I learned with making these films. And I think that is a way that also the viewers of my films can understand, because they can follow my ideas and learning about these things. And in the last 10 years, I made 9 films on this subject.
Wow.
9 films, that means that after each film, there came new ideas, and new things are coming up, or new poisons, or a new strategy of the companies, or whatever.
And I just want to make it clear for anybody that's listening today that we're not here to bash business. Both of us are very much in support of business, people having businesses. There's nothing wrong with having a business or wanting to make money. The problem that we are discussing is the fact that the corporations do not have a moral or ethical obligation. They only have one obligation, and that is to make money for their shareholders. They are not remotely concerned to as far as what happens to people that are subjected to the products that they have, that they've been producing. And that is where the problem lies. And especially if you have people who are scientists, who are well-educated, who have the actual expertise, and, you know, they have been doing this for a number of years, who understand what is going on. And when these scientists actually speak out and say, hey, look, you know, we need to stop, we need to rethink this, all of a sudden, because they object, they are becoming the targets of all these attacks. And that is a very, very important issue to discuss.
Yeah, what I learned is that there is no more responsibility for the nature or for the people or for the consumers. That doesn't matter. It's only money, and to get power. And a company like Monsanto, they don't hesitate to say, we want to get the power from the field to the table on to the dishes on the table. You know, the whole area. And you can really have the power over people if you have the power over food. And you see in the last years how the prices of food are mounting. And especially the people in the third world, they were suffering under this. And my motivation is because I'm not just doing it as a neutral journalist or so. I'm doing it as somebody who lives here, who has to eat every day, and who wants to know what he is eating or what is offered and what is in our food. And that's why I'm doing this research and doing these films. And I spoke ago about this film, Life Running Out of Control. And the last sentence in this film is from a scientist in Norway who said he thinks that only 5% of the scientists who were working in this area are independent. The other were dependent to industry or they were paid by industry. And that made me curious, and I wanted to know more about it. And I found two main scientists who did some research in this area. They came to results, and from their personal responsibility, they published this, what they found. And industry was furious because they were paying for this, and they said, he has not the right to do it, and so on, and so on. And they really punish these people. And also Percy Schmeisser is one person. He's a farmer in Canada. And he was sued by Monsanto over 10 years. And this is a sign for other farmers or for young scientists. If you are looking at this and this and this, and if you are questioning the wrong things, you will be punished like these examples, which you know. We didn't speak about this. Once it is Arpad Pusztai. Arpad Pusztai, he is a Hungarian scientist who went during the Hungarian, or when the Russians came to Hungary in 56, he went to England because he hoped that he can work there freely. And he did this for 35 years, and he was a world-famous man who was an expert in feeding studies. That means he feeds rats or mice to test how will be the reactions or how the organs will react on what he is feeding them, and to get ideas what will happen with humans if they eat it. And he got from the English. From the English government, they asked him to look at genetically modified potatoes to find some ideas how they can judge over genetically modified fruit or potatoes or a maze or whatever, to find, I don't know the right word, to find a measurement. And then he did his tests. He made himself potatoes which were genetically modified, and then he fed them to his mice. But he didn't do this as industry normally is doing for a short time, but he did it for 110 days. And then what he found was for him really alarming, because he found that the immune system was no more the same, that the weight of the organs was different, and. A lot of things, and he said, this is a sign we have to look deeper in this. We can't do it only for 100 days. We have to do it longer. We have to do it for several generations of these mice or rats. And then per chance, a TV company came by and was interviewing him for something else. And they asked him what he was doing in the moment and so on. And he said, okay, I did this feeding studies, and the result is that we have to look more and deeper in this. And there was 1 minute and 50 seconds or so was published, and some days later he said, I don't like that my fellow citizens were used as guinea pigs. Mm. That was one thing, and the second thing, I wouldn't eat it until I know exactly what's going on in animals and humans if they eat this genetically modified food. And some days later, he has to leave his laboratory, and he couldn't work anymore. He was forbidden to phone. He was even in a new contract forbidden to speak about anything what happened there in this institute and what he found out. And it was luckily that the English Parliament heard of this, and they invited him to speak about this. And so he was allowed in the future to speak about what his studies have been. And that was the reason that we couldn't do the film and speak with him about what he found.
Wow,
this is one example. And he was thrown out of the Royal Society, which is like a science academy here in Europe, and he is not rehabilitated until today.
Oh, that's a pretty devastating situation to be in. I mean, folks, for those of you that are listening, imagine if you had a career that you worked very hard, and you are very well established, you're very well respected, and then all of a sudden, because you're doing your job, you are basically, for the most part, excommunicated and considered to be an outcast. I mean, this is very disturbing that this could even happen in this day and age, all because he is doing what he has been doing for how many years. Mm-hmm. This is what these companies are doing. They are basically pulling these thug tactics to destroy lives. And these are the lives of the people who are actually doing the research to keep us safe.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that I have said this many times to people. It's interesting. If you're walking down the street and somebody just walks up to you and assaults you, of course you're going to be upset, and you're going to look to, depending upon what they do to you, you're going to do something about it. You're going to say, hey, either stop hurting me or you're going to call the police. Well, if a corporation hurts you, it's funny. People are just letting these things go. And the fact that the people who are protecting us, who are the scientists, I mean, that's what scientists do. They do research. And the research is very important for a myriad of reasons, especially when it comes to our food safety. And also, I'd like to point out that if there's something new, most people, if you just give them something blindly without telling them what it is, they're going to say, you know, what is this? They want to know what it is before they eat it. So why wouldn't you want to know what's in something before you consume it? And especially if you're talking about something that is been created in a laboratory, of course you're going to want to know what's in it. This what he said basically is sheer common sense. So for anyone that is out there listening, this is nothing unusual.
Maybe we should say two or three sentences on genetic engineering, what the industry is doing. They were changing the cell of a plant. Let's say it's soya or soy, as you say. Mm-hmm. And they change this soy, changing some genes, that this soy will be resistant to the poison that they were selling with the seeds of the soy. And that means you can put this poison on the field. Everything is dying in the field, but only the soy will survive. And that's the idea which is behind this. And I think that is a terrible, terrible thing, that they were poisoning the earth and killing everything around, just for money and profit and to be able to patent this plant. And they didn't develop this plant. This plant was created by farmers over hundreds of years, and they just put one gene in, and they say, now this plant is ours. Or they say, this gene is ours, but the gene is in the plant, and so the plant is theirs. But the terrible thing is nature reacts on this. That I was in Brazil during the shooting, and we saw that the, what are the names? The wheat around the soy plant became, after 5 years already, resistant. And they were growing quicker than the plant, and they were taking the light and the sun from the plant. The plant couldn't really
get... It can grow, yeah. It's not going to propagate, especially if these weeds are becoming stronger because they're completely resisting the chemicals.
Yeah. And the reaction of the farmer is, if it was allowed to put 1 liter glyphosate, they now took 8 liter glyphosate because they were in fear that they couldn't save their yield, but they finally couldn't save it, and they use more and more poisons, and the industry is offering more and stronger poisons. They offer the poison that they used in Vietnam already, this 2,4-D, or what is this called, and offered this to the farmer, and the farmer used it. And the next step was for industry to offering, because this soy was only resistant to one poison. But now they are creating, per genetic engineering, plants which were resistant to 6 or 8 different poisons. And maybe they know each poison, but they don't know, and it's not looked at. There's no research, no public research, nothing, how the reaction between these different poisons will be. If the farmers were in trouble and they use this, and the next day they use another poison, just to save their seeds. Not the seeds, but their yield.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is that this, in turn, is creating a problem because of the fact that the more chemicals that they're dumping on the land, the more devastation is occurring with the pollinators, more specifically with the honeybees. And, you know, it's further devastating the already drastically declining honeybee population. So everything does tie into everything else. And, you know, folks, if you like to eat food, you could thank a beekeeper for that. But the bottom line is the more chemicals that are dumped on the crops, the worse it's getting. Now, one of the things that I want to ask you also is, when it comes to the introduction of these actual chemicals to the farmers, it's kind of interesting how they go about doing it. Can you just take a moment to explain what you found how these chemical corporations go about introducing these products, almost like a reward to the farmer that is choosing to utilize their technology.
Yeah, we made a film about Percy Schmeisser, this Canadian farmer who got genetically modified raps. What is raps?
The GM soy.
No, it was not soy. In his case, it was rape, I think.
Yeah, rape meat, the canola.
Yeah, canola, yes, that's it. And it was blown by the wind on his field. And then Monsanto, they have an army of people who were running over the fields, taking plants, and they were analyzing this. And they said, here you have our plants, our patent on your field. And they took him to court. But Percy Schmeisser, he was not a simple farmer. He was also an official in his town and so on, and he was used to such things. And he went on his side to court too. And he went within 10 years until the Supreme Court in Canada. And the Supreme Court in Canada ruled